Hey everybody, welcome to the Liberty Squadron podcast. My name is Andrew Lewinsky, and this week I am joined with Chris Apple.
Hello.
Marshall Staggs.
Hey everybody.
And Jonathan Lee.
Hello everyone.
All right guys, we are going to do our New Year's recap this week. We're going to be talking about what happened in 2018, what we're expecting in 2019, our New Year's resolutions, stuff like that. But right off the bat, we might as well start with the recap and... basically, in the beginning of the year, we're going to start off with this two medalist final form. If anyone remembers that, it was Trajectory Simulator Nim with Miranda and Ghost Fen, which that should still be fresh in your minds because, I mean, that never really got a fix or anything like that. So
no, neither of those listed. Those, I think...
the Trajectory got it with Genius.
Oh, that's right. They did fix Genius. But yeah, other than that, those kind of like... cruised on into September pretty much untouched by anything.
Right. So we're going like, you know, back in like February.
Yeah, this is... oh, yeah. When did we... so, yeah. So we got Nim in like around that time. Yeah, right.
We got Nim in the summer, but I think what it was the Bombers. When the Bombers came out with the movie, that introduced Trajectory Simulator.
That's right. That's what it was. Yeah. Okay. That's when it went south.
Right. Yes. So this is like the point that like FFG just stopped caring and were like, just let's throw everything in there.
They cared in November when they fixed Genius, right? But then...
well, that was the last one, I think, wasn't it? That was kind of the last big tweak that they did.
Yeah.
If I recall. It was like right after PAX, I think.
Well, so yeah, they changed it, Genius. They changed them... they changed them the first time saying that you couldn't bump and drop the bomb. You actually had to complete the maneuver fully. And then they just basically straight up were like, no, you can't throw a bomb after you, Genius. Even though like the word text, everything like seemed like it was rules as written could work. They basically were like, no. And like that caused, if you could like looking back, that caused like so many rifts in the community that like people running regionals were like, we're banning this. We don't care. Like this is oppressive to the game. But other like,
well,
That was Gameskeep, right? That the Gameskeep regional, or not Gameskeep, the one in Games and Stuff, the one in Maryland.
Right.
There was that big. They put the TO put up a poll on the Facebook page about whether or not they were gonna like honor the ruling.
So what had happened was the regional at the FFG Game Center put out a ruling, but it was not an official FFG ruling. So then half the community said, okay, this is FFG trying to send us a subtle message. And then the other half of the community said, no, we have to follow what's written as the rules until FFG officially tells us. And at the Gameskeep, at Games and Stuff in Glen Burnie, they elected to do the Genius nerf where you could not move and then launch the bomb. And this is all first edition talk to all our second edition.
Right.
So essentially, Mike, we're
being gibberish right now. It's because we are kind of, because it was gibberish in a way.
It was like really just kind of like FFG just throwing everything, being like, we don't care at this point, and like we maybe should have seen it, or like one of two things were going to happen: either the game was out the window, like people were quitting the game nonstop, or what happened for the better was second edition was announced. Like so, the breaking the glass for the gunboats, like everyone was just like, oh, finally we're getting gunboats. And like everyone kind of said like that, and the X-Wing fix was like signs that FFG was just going to like give us whatever we wanted because people were speculating that the game was on the way out. So.
Because we got gunboats, right? Which were good for, I think, a total of 5, maybe 7 days.
Yeah, BBQD.
Yeah.
Right? Like the thing that jousted everything and people complained about for a week. And then we got Thweek before all of this sort of started, right? Before, like, that was, I think, in November as well, time frame. Which to me, like, looking back, Thweek is like this obvious signal that they stopped designing. Because, like, I can't imagine them ever reintroducing Thweek just because of the copy powers ability being so crazy to balance.
Right.
And then we got 5X, which is like, I don't know, like
5X crack. Yeah.
Right. Like, that was a super fun list, but it was definitely what you were describing of FFG just giving people what they wanted on the way out, you know?
And, like, so the other thing you kind of, like, look at, like, where they kind of just didn't care was all this stuff, like, isn't in second, like, Thweak isn't in second edition now, so they were just like, let's just throw this out there, see if, like... And, like, I don't know if it was Thweak was in a playtest for, like, second edition or anything like that, but, like, he's not in the game now, so it kind of makes you think, like, they just were like, all right, let's throw everything we can at them and let them have fun, or let's ruin the game for the last couple months and that's it.
Yeah, I mean, like, so a lot of that stuff wasn't even overpowered. Like, you could tell they were just maybe experimenting.
Yeah.
Which probably paid off for 2.0 in some ways, right? Because right. They just tried, like, they tried Krennic, and they made Krennic essentially five cards in one. Or, well, wait, so it's a shield upgrade. Three. It's
first edition Krennic.
Yeah, so they gave Krennic a shield upgrade, primary weapon guidance chips, essentially, and then you got FCS all in one card. Like, they were clearly testing something.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you look at the past couple of waves, it's almost like they were just doing, like, the huge beta test with, like, second edition. So that could have been it. Like, we were the beta test. Or alpha test, even.
Well, they tested all the force power stuff, and we didn't get it.
Right, so I don't know if anyone...
Planned expansion.
Right. There was that missing SKU number that everyone... was
SKU 57, I think.
Right, and, like, yeah. Everyone was speculating what, like, it was going to be another epic ship or something like that, and then I think someone, like, leaked on, like, the Reddit saying that, like, it was supposed to be force powers... That they just, like, completely didn't put into the game because they were like, this makes no sense. Like, how you can't have Luke without a force power or anything like that. So, but we eventually
really
got it.
It was the dark times. Like, it was pretty bad.
Yeah.
Can you imagine if we had gotten force powers, like, stapled onto the end of one?
I think the players that were got it right. Playing. You would have enjoyed it.
Well, yeah. The nine people, yeah.
Yeah. So it's interesting to see, like, the state of the game that it got to before announcing it. And then we got May 2018. The day before Worlds, they announced second edition will be coming in September. So that kind of left, like, I guess a moment of, like, clarity that, like, everything started to make sense. And then at the same time, it was kind of a moment of, let's do whatever the F we want in the game. Like,
was it really the day before Worlds?
Yes.
Yeah, it was the Wednesday, I think.
Oh, man.
It was the Wednesday of Worlds.
It was the in-flight report, yeah, before Worlds.
All I know, I mean, like, so going to Worlds was so much fun, but it was just... like crazy relaxed, like it just took the air out of everybody, I guess.
Yeah,
but I hadn't been to any other Worlds besides that one, so my kind of context for it's maybe a little skewed. But it feels like everyone was just super laid back at, like, what was supposed to be the premier event of, or I guess the Worlds just never really that premier, but it just,
yeah, it was a big deal though. It was, I think it was like the event that people actually kind of took seriously.
Right. I think it's a little bit of both. So there was, like, the event that, like, people took seriously, but at the same time, it was kind of like X-Wing Con where, like, people just went to fun. And, like, it was big meeting ground where, like, there was, you know, barbecues happening in the parking lot and everything like that. So,
It seemed like the end of a Star Wars movie when I went, because it was just like, it was just a big celebration. It was like the end of the Phantom Menace, like not one of the good ones, right? But it was pretty fun.
Right. Yeah, so, but I mean, they changed all that now. Like, it looks like it's going to be, Worlds is going to be like the premier event to be at. Like, it's invite only, and those less serious players aren't going to be able to participate, which... we haven't experienced the first Worlds yet, so it'll be interesting to see how that pans out. But
so imagine Coruscant, but not a meme format.
Yeah,
it's basically what it is.
Right. How many people are at Coruscant?
90-ish.
Okay. Yeah.
So yeah, but I would say, like, people are probably going to take it a lot more seriously than they would Coruscant, because I mean, you get a Coruscant, just kind of having fun. I mean,
well, especially with the Twitter format.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, okay. So we have May, second edition is announced. Then basically in between May and September, it's just people screwing around doing whatever the heck they want. You know, this probably one of the worst turnouts for store championships that summer.
Yeah.
So it was a really weird time for the game.
But yeah. I thinking back to that time frame, we started, like, there was a point in time after it was announced where we began kind of proxying stuff. Because there was a slow trickle of information that they gave out, right?
Oh, and eventually, Gen Con, I think.
Demo lists from Worlds. So we had like four or five lists that we could screw around with.
So, like, some of my best memories from 2018, honestly, for X-Wing was just like proxying that. And like, it was total made up stuff, honestly, but it was still really fun just to, like, you know, try to proxy what we had learned as we were learning it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a completely different game.
Yeah. That summer was, Andrew, like, you're at Nova also, right?
And, yeah.
Yeah. It was just, it was fun, but it was sort of odd.
Right. And
Nova was the real end. That was like the end of credit scene, basically.
Do you remember what won Nova?
No.
Fen. Ghost Fen. Yeah, it
was the most fitting ending.
Exactly. So, okay, so then we have September 2nd edition is finally released. Hooray! The game is saved. So, Chris, do you want to, like, run down? You got this list of...
I mean, yeah, sure.
You take this segment.
Okay. So, I guess we can do a little bit of a retrospective on second edition so far.
Comparing it to, yeah.
And just some of the things that second edition has done well. Because I think we can all agree that second edition is absolutely a success.
Yeah.
Like, it has problems, but it's super fun.
I mean, I would definitely say it's a success looking back at, Christ, that first system open and at PAX Unplugged, had 160 people just, like, showed up out of nowhere. Like, people were expecting under 100, under 80 even, because it was a Friday cut. So, I mean, the numbers are speaking for themselves.
Yeah, and then just the experience does too.
Right.
Like, I'm having more fun. I can say that definitively.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely a game that, jumping into the game later, we have yet to really play. And it's nice to see what the original players, like, did see in the game before, like, all these crazy things did come into the game.
Yeah, and then also, like, because I know there's a lot of nostalgia from that early time, and you can kind of tell that. Right, and, like, you can tell that Wave 3 was maybe, I don't want to call it uneducated X-Wing, but there's a lot that we know now that they
did. It's sort of uneducated, yeah.
Fair. Yeah, like I think there's just an entire tactical kind of view of the game that maybe exists at this stage after all those years.
Well, I think what X-Wing right now most of is wave like 7.5. Like at least extended. Like every faction has one list that's like pretty good and kind of annoying. And like there are super powerful things, but there is like a weird balance that is created by like a bunch of things kind of being overpowered.
So was Wave 7 point, that was Force Awakens, but before that was Gunmaster?
That was, yes, Force Awakens expansions. So we had Omega Leader, but before Jumpmasters. So like December 2005 to March 2016.
You know what's interesting, right? Like, so like my kind of early days of X-Wing were right around the same time that NIMH came out and Lowrick and all that.
Oh, wow.
Okay. So like my context for this game is like the reason I think I love second edition so much is I pretty much only, like, I started with what most people would consider the worst version of the game. Potentially, but
yeah,
I like what you referenced though of that particular wave. There's a lot on this list. We'll get to it in a second. But one thing I would say is Extended has a bunch of problems. It has to get, you know, point adjustments in a couple really key areas, but not a huge number of them. But if you look at the very top tier lists, like if you take, just as an example, like if you take Whisper, Soontir, and Redline, right? The power level of that list, like in comparison to the power levels that you might have seen from lists before, it's, I don't want to call it B tier, right? But it's not like a game ending list that's at the top of the meta, right? And like even sure. that is incredibly impressive, because Extended is like this absurdly huge card pool. I don't know how much testing they could have possibly done. But for them to have get through like the beta phase, which has been the past couple months of the early days of second edition, and like the best possible lists feel B tier compared to like the worst lists that we've seen in the past, something went right.
Yeah, they did. I think like thinking about that, they did kind of nail it in a way that I was not expecting them to.
Not that they shouldn't change stuff about that list, right? It's just
sure, but there's nothing like sky is falling insane in the way that there used to be.
Right. So that's kind of a good precursor to this, I guess. And then there's a whole bunch of more kind of specific stuff. I know we've talked about this a bunch, but games feel like they're decided by decisions more is kind of a goofy way to say that. But essentially, I feel more responsible for, you know, failure, and I feel like my opponents are, you know, like when they do well, there's a very specific set of things that they actively did on the table, and that led to success, you know. Maybe that's kind of overly positive.
Or I mean, could you
say, no, I agree with that.
So it's a sort of like games are not won or lost at list building as much as they used to be.
It still happens, right? So like if I go into a game with a bid and a supernatural moving last against certain things, it's over, right? But there are, at least at the tournament level, the games that I've played, I don't know. I can always point back and be like, yeah, I had a way of winning that game. Whereas like in 1.0, there were absolutely games where I felt like I was losing the math. Just math. Like, I could shoot at Ghost Fen for as long as I want with this bad list, I'm going to lose.
Mm-hmm.
There were like, and you know what the best way to describe that is? It's like, there were more, I used to refer to them as hit point countdown lists. So in 1.0, there were all kinds of lists that you were basically running against the clock. It was going to do damage to you. You needed to do a certain amount of damage by, you know, X point in the game, or you were definitely out.
Yeah.
That experience, I don't have that experience as much. Like Time Walk Asajj was one of the better examples of that, right? Where it's like, oh, it's just a thing I don't do damage to. Like
that fucking list.
I forgot about that. So the point is, defense is mostly bad right now, and that makes the game better.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Which is like Alpha Strike still piss people off, but like when you don't do any damage at all in a game called X-Wing, like people check out.
Mm. One of the big things about defense is that like there's absolutely turns in the game that like nothing is. No damage is being pushed through for a number of reasons, where like in first edition, if you shot past someone or something like that, you're out of your arc or anything, you were probably getting TLT'd, like almost
yeah.
guaranteed. Like where now it's kind of like there could be like three or four turns where you're just not tokened up. Neither people are, one side is tokened up, or you're just out of arc. There's like, there's these turns now that you actually have to think about your positioning and reassigning that engagement instead of just being like, okay, I'm just going to TLT the other person to death or something like along those lines.
Right. So like the thing we broke down in an earlier episode or a couple weeks back or whatever it was, we talked about Boba Fett, right? Yeah. And how frustrating it can be to play against Boba Fett. Cause it's like, it just sort of, it's just this Rube Goldberg machine. It just does its own thing at a certain point in the game. And it's like, oh, I guess, well, all right, where do I go from here? But even that, there's counterplay that isn't card based. Like Tractor Beam definitely helps, but you can also just position slightly better and have a better chance, improve your odds. So my third bullet here was like, this is kind of dumb, but like low fat turrets are healthier for everybody. So they're still fat turrets, but they're not like Boba is definitely a fat turret, but it's not quite as fat.
Taste half the calories.
Yeah, exactly. That's so stupid like that, but like it's still annoying. Like Boba Fett's a cool character, and the Fire Spray is an awesome ship, and it should be good. And a lot about that ship is designed perfectly. But like, you know, that's another signal to me that like 2.0 has been working, right? Because even that, we're complaining about a Fire Spray. you know, it definitely has blind spots, even though that hard one turn is ridiculously powerful.
Yeah.
So I, you know, that kind of leads into area of effect mechanics in general are worse. So you talk to this, Andrew. Turrets are, you know, TLT is no longer here, which is like the turret, right?
Right.
Yeah. But bombs are also like bombs when bombs can move, like, and moving is basically your ship moves and then the bomb goes down in reaction to something. Bombs. Yeah. Like the secret in 1.0 was that bombs were also turrets, right?
Yeah. You could just.
Yeah, and they still kind of are turrets. It's just they occur in a different phase.
Yeah,
exactly. There's going back to one point. I don't want to turn this into a conversation about like hatred against turrets and bombs as a mechanic, because there's a place for them in the game. But the 1.0 version of those, losing that has been monumental. Like, it's just better because they're gone.
Yeah.
So, a couple years, Marshall, do you remember that game where we both brought tournament we both brought Dash Miranda?
I do. Yes. I do remember
it. It was like Monsters. A perfect mirror match.
We played Warhammer for 75 minutes.
We should have just flipped a coin at the beginning.
Wait, so you got the mirror though?
Yeah, we both
got Dash Miranda. I think
our Miranda's.
Keep going out, Marshall.
I wonder why I'm doing that. yeah. Oh, I was just saying, I think our Mirandas had like different bombs, but that was it. Otherwise, it was like Rainbow Dash and Miranda.
Well, it was before people did Lone Wolf Dash, so it was before.
Yeah,
that.
So it was Kanan. It was Kanan yeah. Dash. Yeah.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
We should have just flipped the coin at the beginning and gone to get a beer after.
Yeah.
But yeah, so
but that happened. That happened a lot in 1.0.
Conceded.
it just like doesn't happen anymore, which is amazing.
It happens less. Like there's elements of Nim Miranda that still exist, but like 25% of it, right?
Right.
Like you get the high initiative, you get the alpha strike, you get the kind of unavoidableness of that alpha strike, sort of, but it's still kind of avoidable. But the consequences of, you know, doing a lot of setup and ending up out of arc or at range one or bumping are different. They're lesser. Like the dumb thing with Nim was you would avoid the harpoon range and avoid the TLT range, and then you'd take a bomb. Like,
yeah,
like all that's gone. It's really. That's just been liberating for the game overall, but I think we're seeing a whole bunch of side effects that are being looked at negatively that people like just need to understand are sort of part of the transition. So just to skip ahead a little bit, like there's been a huge amount of concern in the community around high bids and, you know, high initiative moving with a lot of reposition ability and all of that. But that's sort of like part of the price that we paid to get out of that 1.0 style game. And I think that now the game is starting to like be looked at and refined without kind of turrets as a hard counter to mobility. And it's, you know, there's different things now that FFG is going to start to look at to tweak it and get the formula better. So, you know, there's a lot in there, but you know, just the best example of that is just the removal of veteran instincts, right? Like that translated directly over the past couple months into 10-point bids.
Yeah.
It didn't go anywhere. It just became a bid.
So people are sitting there like complaining about bids, but I know there are lists out there that specifically will not take advantage of, but they can deal with this. Like, it's not like, so obviously if you are playing a list that needs a bid, you're going to need a bid as deep as possible. But there are lists out there that can use that full 200 points without any bid at all that can still take care of that.
Absolutely, right? And like, I think there's a whole conversation as players about things we can do to just deal with that inherently, and it's not that bad. But just the fact that we're having, like, as a community, a whole bunch of debates around, like, the initiative rules and the bid rules and initiative kill, like, and all of that, I think it's just moving the design conversation forward, like, already. And I, like, that's a good thing. We had to get away from turrets to even have this conversation.
Yeah.
We used to talk about it, but we did it within the context of, like, Soontir, who was actually still just jousting. Like, it wasn't actually arc dodging anything.
Right.
So I don't know. But the other kind of couple things to throw out, I think on the back of that entire thing, movement and mobility matters more, which is what we all wanted, right? Like, we all wanted movements and dials to matter. They've done that, but because movement and dials matter more, ships that reposition and the initiative at which they reposition matters more.
Yeah, like, especially because, like, the whole the turret change action, like, the like, that is huge. And, like, I think that was one of the things that people were so hype about in the beginning about Luke Gunner, was they're like, oh, this game's not even changing because Luke Gunner exists. And granted, we haven't really seen Luke Gunner because he's 30 points, but it's that idea of maybe he does have a place with lower initiative pilots because they are going to get arc dodged. I mean, granted, I still don't think he's ever going to be taken at 30 points, but
We should have a little side chat about the things we freaked out about that turned out
right.
Well, yeah, but Luke Gunner though is an extremely good card. We never want to be good,
right? Exactly. Like, you never want to be able to take him in a good list.
And there's a whole bunch of cards like that, right? That exist in second edition, and they can, but like we never want them to actually be playable. And like, but like that's kind of what's interesting to me is that second edition is because they have these design concepts that say turrets, 360 turrets are not allowed. Bombs are supposed to be, you know, only really useful in the system phase, right? Now we're having a balancing conversation around, well, now how do you balance high initiative, hyper reposition aces? Which was always good, just harder to see. So no one talked about it.
Yeah, and I tell you what, like, if FFG seems to be actively aware of what is and isn't good, and like I got a feeling they have a plan for like what they're going to be doing. Like, so we know that hyperspace is a format they're going to be pushing in the future, and we know that they're going to be rotating in and out of different upgrade slots. So I mean, if it's a format that they're actually pushing and something that, like, what the heck is it? Supernatural is so oppressive and everything, that's something they could just be like, okay, it's out. And that's, like, the progress that FFG has really made that is going to keep the game alive and well.
Right. And then, like, on top of that, they can also... So one of the things that we've seen in second edition is there are a couple really good swarms. Draea and Sloan swarms are legitimately awesome.
Yep.
Right? Yeah. Like, they're really good. Sloan won packs because it's this crazy control element. It's probably too good, right? But I don't know. I won't get into that. But the point is that there are higher ship count lists that balance these sort of hyper maneuverable aces or could balance them from the other direction. So, you know, Andrew, you're saying Supernatural, they could kind of ban or raise the cost of until it can't really be used, like Luke Gunner. They could also do something with swarms to sort of make them more attractive. And then that flips everything on its head because you're going up to those 200 points and really punishing something.
Yep.
Like, these are just really not that major. Like, these aren't groundbreaking 3.0 style changes. They're just refinements of the formula, you know?
Mm-hmm. I tell you what, it's really going to be interesting to see how the Hyperwave, not, like, initially, but through the years, is going to, like, pan out. Because it's going to be, like, is, like, you know, we talk about 1.0 with the pre-nerf Phantom era, the Dengaru era, and like all of these things are things that got eroded and nerfed and all this stuff, and it's going to be interesting to see if like how the hyperspace metas pan out. Is it just going to be like, okay, well, this was the meta that was arose and then they took it out, they shifted it out of hyperspace, and it's going to be like I said, it's how they're going to change everything every so often to actually have these different metas like going. You get what I'm saying?
It's twice a year, right? So I think there'll definitely be some metas that just sort of evolve because of the space between the adjustments. But if something really crazy happens, they can always do an emergency fix. But it just means that like each successive version of hyperspace, they can kind of like get more refined, you know? And they have so many different ways of doing that. So like, mm-hmm. like right now everyone's talking about X-Wing is there's at least the extended version of second edition X-Wing. It's Ace-Wing. It's I-5. That's what it is. You take right. aces, right? Mm-hmm. And you take a proton torp. Or like that's pretty much what the vast majority of the player base is like settled into. Mm-hmm. Like FFG has so much control over where we go from here with that. Maybe I'm overestimating like that level of control. Maybe the initiative rules are a legitimate kind of problem, but I don't think it is. I think they can balance their way out of it with format.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, exactly what I was trying to get across was that like, Christ, could you imagine if like they just took all the I-6s out of hyperspace?
Yeah, I mean, so have you ever used like 3 I-4 sabers against something that's I-3, right? Yeah. Like it's the same problem, but yeah, I mean they have just got so many different options now that all of our complaints really are going to probably look silly very quickly,
right?
And I, you know, the flip side of all of this, like the Ace-Wing concept, I just want to touch on this briefly, but like, I think Ace-Wing is the version of the game that most people want to play when they go to play X-Wing. Like, the vast majority of people go to the store, pick their list, put some stuff on the table. They just tend to take I-5, I-6 named pilots that do cool things. And people like that feeling of moving after their opponent.
Yeah. Or like, why do you think people have an aversion to playing swarms? It seems like swarms should be good, but we don't see them as often as we should.
Mentally taxing.
I mean, that's
a high floor. It's the high floor, high ceiling list. And I think people just stray away from that.
Right. Is that true though?
So
I personally think it is. I have a really hard time keeping track of like more than 5 ships on a table.
Right, and the other thing,
I have to make decisions about what all of them are doing.
We did that one second edition tournament, and like it was, how many swarms were there? I think there was 8 players, and I want to say 5 people brought swarms, and like just seeing like swarm against swarm, it was just a mess. And like maybe it's OCD or something along those lines, but it was just kind of like it was hard to keep track of everything. It was hard to, I'm not a swarm player myself. But at the same time, I can see the where it's hard to play. Like it really is.
Well, especially with swarm versus swarm, there's nothing that I want to do less than spend
playing operation.
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, so but
I have no interest in it.
Yeah. Okay.
So it's not what I want the meta to be, I guess.
So this is really interesting, though, right? Because I think we got to define what swarm means. So there's TIE swarm, which is box formation jousting, yeah. Right?
And Runner, Iden, and however many.
Right. So like there's like this the famous Thai box formation, you know, doing its normal thing of hard turning or banking in at a specific spot on the board, jousting, creating a jumbled mess, whatever, right? I don't know, like the Thai swarm I think is a really specific edge case of like a high ship count list that I think the vast majority of people don't really enjoy. It is cool. It's actually a really interesting sort of puzzle for a lot of players. But there's what you guys are describing is probably absolutely true, which is just it's just people don't really want to do that for right. whatever reason. But I think swarms to me means a lot more than that. Like Drea swarm or Sloan swarms are existing archetypes that honestly don't have that many ships. Like you're talking about like 5 to 6 ships. None of it's moving in formation, right? It dies, like you lose 2 ships within the first 20 minutes of the game because of Proton Torps, which is probably a bigger reason why more people at the top level aren't taking swarms. But like the whole concept of swarms being hard or like cumbersome, I think it's sometimes true, but a lot of games it's like only true for the first 20 minutes and then all your like you're down to like 5 ships. And that's it.
Yeah, but I think my thing with it though is like you make like it's one of those it's the type of list where you make one mistake and then it's like game over. Like I'm pretty good at like eyeballing stuff, but I'm not nearly as good as I need to be to like
So like let's say not you. No, I'm not like saying this to like be like but like let's say like why aren't more like so
I no, that's a fair question, yeah.
Right. So like but like what I guess what Chris is saying, why aren't we seeing like the top level players flying Tie Swarms?
Well, and not Tie Swarms, because like I think in hyperspace Tie Swarm will be relevant. But for this conversation, like you really need to just talk Dre and Sloan. Because I think Howell Iden is going to be good in hyperspace. We have not seen Tie Swarms be relevant in anything yet, right? So Swarm means Drea and it means Sloan.
Yeah.
That's, I think that's worth it. Kind of
Jonathan, what were you going to say?
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay, so like, but looking at this next like bullet point though, like, so it says the moment a good fat turret appears, players flock to it immediately. So like, this is like a good counterpoint is maybe this is what players want, like that you don't have these all these jumbled chips and all these decisions to make. You only literally have 2. I will honestly say that Dash Rourke is a one ship list, but like I think that's what people are comfortable with, like less decisions, and you can still mess up with them. Boba not so much, but it's a little bit easier on the brain. It's a little bit easier just to keep track of everything. And I think that might be part of what it is. And you not as many decisions to make, where with you flying a Tie Swarm, you're literally making about 6 to 7 decisions and trying to think ahead of 6 or 7 decisions, like 2 to 3 turns ahead.
Well, but okay. So I kind of just to reset, right?
Okay.
Like, so like the Tie Swarm, I want to move the conversation away from the Tie Swarm because it's a really specific list. Like there are people who are engineers or whatever who look at the Tie Swarm and the puzzle of moving those ships perfectly in formation around the board and at the correct moment going in for the joust, like or picking one of their ships to be the blocker is everything to them. And that's cool. Like, I've tried it. I can see the nuance. I understand why it's fun. The thing you need to understand with the Tie Swarm, though, is you're not setting 8 dials. You're setting 1 dial on a lot of turns until you choose to send one off to engage.
Right.
So I think a big part of this is people are really lazy, and they don't physically want to move the ships, which is what you guys were talking about at the start.
That is fact.
Which is, like, once everything's, like, smashing into each other, you have to set all those bumps and all of that. Like, that's what people kind of don't want. And then in addition to that, like, then you can kind of move the conversation to swarms that I think are the most interesting in the game, which are swarms that are out of formation, that are casting a wide net, and trying to arrive or you know, set a really kind of moldable kind of range in which they can do essentially an alpha strike, right? Because that's what these lists are. I mean, they're jousting and they're going to delete something and trade one low cost thing along the way, right?
Right, because your opponent can't shoot every ship, so they have to commit to one thing, and while they're doing that, you have them in a kill box.
And your opponent, exactly. And your opponent brought an ace, which is no longer hyper defensible. So even if you only catch him in like five of your seven arcs, like you're doing meaningful damage, right? And they couldn't avoid it because you sort of measured your speeds and angle properly along the way. Like that type of pre-planning in a no formation swarm, I guess that is slightly more difficult. But a part of me, like, because I've spent the better part of the past couple months just running this type of stuff, like, whereas I used to really only run kind of trip aces in 1.0, what really strikes me is that these lists, a lot of times, boil down to jousting, right? Some of them are sort of like fancy jousting, right? Some of them are kind of delaying the joust by walking along an edge of the board and casting that net by just inviting the player into the net. But I think that's the thing that's most overblown about swarms, is that they aren't that complicated, because a lot of the time all they're doing is pointing at something and killing it. Like the Z95 swarm that Blair Bunky runs, right? That's not super complicated. There's a lot of nuance to it, and you move a lot of things physically. But I'm not sure I would call it hard. I think the initiative rules make it hard because things die fast.
Yeah.
It's like the Talus Squadron of Crackshot.
Yeah, like it's cool and interesting for its own reasons, right? But it's not like I don't think it's mechanically difficult. I think the initiative
I think it has a hard time in the meta though. I think against Boba Fett and bombs with like trajectory simulator bombs and proton torpedoes on everything. That concern for me is equal to, you know, whatever mental inability I have to run us through.
And that's what I would emphasize, though, is like for me, I think the bigger reason people don't take swarms is because if you do, you have a really big risk of losing two ships before you ever used them.
Yeah, right? I think that's more what it is for.
And then on top of that, you know, what you described with the bombs and et cetera, like those matter, but they're so scaled back that I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. It's probably not bombs. It's more proton torpedoes than anything else. I think bombs kind of, and that's where they're going to be. I think seismic charges are kind of a pain in the ass, but I don't think we saw proton bombs meaningful way, at least not as much as I thought we were going to. So proton,
oh, you cut out
Marshall.
Yeah,
oh, proton bombs being what I was really worried about, and people just kind of like not using them.
I think proton bombs with the not being put under the shields helped a lot with that.
That's true.
And I, like, no doubt, like a trajectory sim proton bomb into a formation swarm is a death sentence, right? Yeah. But you can play around that by using a swarm like I described.
Sure, yeah.
So, but all of this is sort of fun to talk about, but I don't think it really matters, because in the end, like what we learned from the first couple of months of second edition is that no matter how good they are, people aren't going to use them. Like,
yeah,
it just doesn't matter. Like, they just don't want to. And it maybe it's as simple as people all want to buy a bunch of the same ship when there's so many ships to buy.
Yeah.
Well, but there are plenty of people who still have old collections who bought two of every conversion kit. Like, if people wanted to run them, they could run them. I think veteran players would not have a problem.
How many TIE fighters does everyone have?
Too many.
Might have a dozen.
So this leads to the kind of one of the bullet points at the bottom here, which is that I think the other big part of this is that generics are overcosted in general, right? That's
some of them are.
Some of them, yeah. Like so, like a gun runner isn't, right? Like that we kind of know.
Matar is not busted. I don't.
A TIE bomber, right? Maybe is right, yeah. Busted. But like those are really specific edge cases. Like across all of the factions, you can look at any of the generics and make a strong case that they're probably a little tiny bit expensive. And we're not talking about like 10-point swings here, right? But
one or two points is enough to knock something out of, A tier or whatever.
Right. It really depends what you're looking at too, because I mean, one person, it could just be one point of, let's say the Phantoms that could take Juke. Maybe that's Juke that's undercosted, or the actual Phantom that is undercosted, but. I mean, do we really think that four Phantoms with Jukes should be allowed?
No.
Exactly. So
the cloak action is way, way
up. Right.
Yeah. Okay. So listen, there are specific generics, absolutely, that are kind of either priced correctly or maybe even undercosted. I think that's a smaller set, though. I can look at the Rebel faction, right? Like, this isn't – I fly mostly Imperials and Scum. Right. So most of my knowledge base is that. But even looking at Rebels, you just look at like Rebel X-Wings.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Those are definitely too expensive.
Yeah.
Like, yes. Definitely. Yeah.
That's why you see Thane and Wedge, is because if you look at the generic, you're like, well, it's not that much more to go up to Thane. So that's why you see Thane and Wedge. And
yeah,
you're at the generics.
And then, you know, so it kind of spirals into what we were talking about before, which is, they remove turrets, which is great, right? They released that crazy article, which was like their version of the pillars of X-Wing and the things that counter stuff. And then like you look at it and it's like, yeah, but none of that really counters those other things. So like turrets don't actually counter aces, right?
Yeah.
That's not right. Like at all a thing that second edition turrets do. Like aces just fly around that stuff.
Yeah.
But what does counter aces is volume of fire and a wide enough net against an ace that can't reposition in the wrong phase. Right. And like that's kind of why I'm rambling about this particular one, is because I think it really matters. Like if you go through and you add, cheap Star Vipers to hyperspace, right. Generic Star Vipers. Like, what does that game look like when an ace suddenly has to deal with a bendy barrel roll? Right, and doesn't have access to supernatural at a crazy cost.
Yeah,
this is just really unexplored space that I don't think we've seen at all through the first couple months of this new game. I can't really think of any list besides Sloan and Drea that really leaned into the generics, besides the Quad Phantoms, I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, we thought barrage bombers were going to be a thing for a while.
They were for local tournaments.
Limited numbers. Yeah. I mean, it's a thing. It's definitely, I would put it among like one of the more efficient lists with, but yeah, we just didn't like nationally, we didn't see it in significant numbers, but I think it's those things that people ignore.
Right, and like so two barrage bombers were in the winning list of PAX, obviously, right?
True,
there
yeah,
were so
true.
Many
yeah,
other
yeah.
pieces in that. I don't know. I don't. It like it's hard to get super
but,
specific.
But like Jendin and four bombers, or Jonas uh-huh. and I don't. We didn't really see
that. Yeah. So that's.
I don't think that's because it's bad. I think it's because people.
Right. So that's where like you look at hyperspace now, right on the horizon. Will the components of the hyperspace format push us, you know, a little bit closer to higher ship count? I don't think without point adjustment, I don't think it would. There's no chance.
You don't think so? You don't think? I feel like Imperials don't have a lot of other options. Well, they have Strikers. Okay, never mind. I was going to say Imperials don't have a lot of options. TIE fighters, but with Strikers, I think you can still keep your ship count relatively low.
Yeah,
like with the named Strikers.
Right. I mean, so maybe the TIE Swarm really catches on. Maybe that is a hyperspace bully for sure. And then that can kind of drive it up slightly. But like, so resistance in First Order isn't going to move us away from Acewing at all.
Yeah, it'll probably just make it worse.
And scum is a known quantity. It's just basically the extended version of scum without Palob and quad jumpers.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, you look at Imperials and I think there's a lot of lists within Imperials that'll work, but they're not particularly high ship count besides the Swarm, the TIE Swarm. It's a fun topic to talk about, but it maybe is just something no one really cares about. Because like we said, they want to play Acewing.
You're not wrong. I mean,
the restricted ship availability is not going to drive people to Sedna. I think people are going to look at Swarms again. Just they have to like reevaluate after the points are adjusted. But I don't think it's unless something crazy happens with the points. I don't think it's going to settle on Swarms.
Especially with bombers being around now, I think they're going to be really that bomber's just going to run right into these Swarms and do damage. I'm not banking on it. I mean, because we're not going to see so much of the Draya Swarms or the Sloan Swarms in hyperspace. We're going to see the TIE Swarms. And that's has me a little worried that these bombers, and this we'll get this into a later episode, that they're going to be very oppressive. And I think they're going under the radar real hard right now.
But like, I feel like the price point of the bomber is such that, I mean, you could fit one. I don't imagine you'd have two in a list.
Yeah, but I think that, I mean, with a 270 degree turret, I mean, I think it's going to be doing damage. And it's something that people should really start looking at on how to approach them.
Do you think there will be enough resistance bombers to dissuade a TIE Swarm player from bringing a TIE Swarm?
I don't know. Like I think reinforce is an extremely powerful mechanic that's as important in this discussion about Swarm as Trajectory Simulator is, right? Because like a reinforced Boba Fett is also a significant problem for the TIE Swarm. But it's really hard to talk about this part of it without the point
adjustments. The point adjustments, right.
Because it's like there's so many mechanics that just... I don't know. Like, they may not even be relevant. I think the one thing that's worth mentioning here, though, is even though that bomber feels like, you know, it can really put a couple proton, you know, bombs down in an unavoidable place for certain ships, it's not really unavoidable, truly. I guess what I'm trying to say is, like, they somehow made bombs interesting again. I don't know how they did. I guess it's probably just because it's in the system phase. So,
yeah.
Yeah. It's like prox mines, right? Like, as an example, when you get a prox mine to land, you feel like you worked for it. So, like, some careful thought went into that. You earned it if the entire TIE Swarm is going through that prox mine. You definitely earned it. Because the one that lets you move and drop is that doesn't let you do devices in general, right? It's just proton bombs.
Yeah, it's just bombs.
It's bombs.
Yeah.
And like the same is true for a trajectory sim. Like if you trajectory sim a proton bomb into a box TIE Swarm, it's the TIE Swarm player's fault. You didn't do anything.
Right. So I'm not saying that like necessarily these bombs are going to be doing damage, but they're going to be forcing these engagements that are going to be beneficial to the bomber and whatever else he's bringing, whether it be scattering the swarm or something like that. Like, and then if that's the case, then let's just say he is bringing Poe. Poe's going to sit there and just chip away at every single one. And I think that's the big thing that we really like. I'm not concerned about these bombs like doing damage. Like, they shouldn't be doing damage, but it's this no fly zones that it's going to be like creating around them and making you force like these engagements that aren't particularly good for the TIE Swarm.
Yeah. I mean, so I think you mentioned we're going to talk about this on a future episode.
Right.
I really want to do a whole bunch of testing with the resistance bomber and then kind of return back to this.
Right.
because like, I still firmly believe that 2.0 bombs are cool, which is something like, I don't want bombs to ever be really, really good, right? I should be clear about that. But 2.0 bombs, because they happen in the system phase, are actually kind of cool. Which is it, like, it's not, oh, it feels bad, like, for your ace sometimes to take a proton crit. But like,
but you let it happen.
Okay. Sort of. Yeah.
If you have the repositioning ability of an ace and pre-movement in a lot of cases, like, you should really not be getting bombed.
So there's some aces that, like, so like Fang Fighters really hate it. Like, hate it.
Okay, yeah. Because yeah, don't have access to a lot of that stuff.
But even that has an option. Like, you can sort of control your engagement. So that's something that FFG, I think, kind of nailed. They just got to keep an eye on it. Yeah. Sort of deal.
Yeah.
They should just not mess with bombs. Like, don't add any stuff that plays around with bombs. Like, in the way that they operate. Just leave them the way they are. They're like, where they are right now.
Yeah, well, so like Genius, no one uses it. 0 points. It exists in the game, right? It has not been touched.
Because there's nothing to put it on. I mean, what are you going to put it on? A Y wing? Like
ablative. So you can put ablative plating on a Scrug, and it still works, right? Like,
yeah, you can definitely throw it on Nim still.
But he's way overpriced, right? Like, nobody's.
Yeah.
Isn't he? I don't know if I've even looked at him.
They took his ordnance off of him, and I think he's like one torpedo slot away from being good.
Okay.
So it's an example, though, of a mechanic, to your point, Marshall, of like, leave them alone.
Yeah.
Like, just be careful about things with a bomb slot, you know, getting too cheap and then giving mechanics to bombs that push them closer to their 1.0 form. Right, like that's all we're asking, but like in the meantime, right, like it is actually an interesting puzzle to solve. If you're good with it, you're probably just pretty good at planning your maneuvers. It's sort of the logic of it. So that dovetails though into one other thing I wanted to cover real fast, and then we could probably wrap this segment up. But the concept of charges linked in red actions. And ship abilities, all of that stuff has been crazy successful, I think.
Yeah, they like nailed it. Totally nailed it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And charges are
nothing bad. Yeah, that's all I was going to say. I have nothing bad to say about charges. Like, but the exception of Dengar having a charge and certain things having a charge for primary or bonus attacks, I think that's a little, maybe they're just future proofing for something, but other than that, like, yeah, there's just the way that they have like reoccurring charges and limited charges, it was definitely like the best thing they could add to the game.
Similarly, like I think the if they're gonna go the route of not like to avoid eroding actual card text, I think there are like visions about charges on certain cards that, like, if they adjusted those, it might be okay. Like Leia crew for rebels, of it costing 3 charges being 2 charges, like without changing the points cost, like it would probably be okay. Like, yeah, it would probably be a perfectly good card. But they can't change that. And I'm not sure that like dropping the points on Leia crew, like, makes it a good card. Wait 3 turns.
Yeah.
1 or 2 things like that, where it's like, just to moderate abilities in a way that they like can't go back on that now, but 99% of cases, like, it's totally fine, and I think they made the right call. But that's the one that jumps out at me right now, and I'm.
So why do you think, so Jess Pava's ability is charge based? So why isn't Boba Fett's ability charge based?
Well, Boba Fett's ability should absolutely be charge based, and that was just an oversight. Like, I think they really missed an opportunity to those.
Yeah, so I mean, like
on a turn, like a kind of abilities. Yeah.
Especially with like Lone Wolf, they could have absolutely made Boba's ability turn based, like our charge based. I'm sorry.
Once per turn, yeah, like a one charge per turn with recurring. So like Afterburners, BB-8, and Pava are really good examples of doing this well. Because it's the whole concept, right? Is like you, like doing things that are basically cheating, is fun in moderation. like that's like people like Ace Wing because they like the cards that let them, you know, feel like they're really good at the game. When really all they are doing is like typing a cheat code. But like we've all played that video game, right? Like you've played, you know, Skyrim or whatever, and use cheats to play it in a more fun way. like that's kind of what this is. But the charges give them this excellent way just to say, yeah, no, you can't do that anymore. So BB-8, right? Supernatural should be this way. I wish it was.
Yeah.
The whole conversation around Supernatural could change. You wouldn't have to talk about it as like a 30-point upgrade. You know, it would still be maybe dominant, even if it was two charges for the whole game. But, you know, it's just those types of levers are so critical, I think, to allow enjoyment into the game that isn't just like the generics only format, but to do it in a rational way.
Right. All right. So
just one last thing, Andrew, to mention, because it's like sort of not related to the game, but I didn't want to get it out there. There's stuff around the periphery that's a bit of a mess. So organized play kind of needs to get its act together, better names, like more clear explanation of what the hell's going on. I think I could say that. But
yeah, so I mean, I guess it's hard to see the big picture of it without knowing anything. We might look back next year and just say, wow, that really worked really well. Or we could be like, that was terrible. Like they shouldn't have changed anything. But yeah, no, it's hard because we're so used to saying regionals, nationals, hyperspace, to change it to hyperspace is a little confusing. So I think we need to give that a little bit of time and then see how that actually does pan out.
I think, yeah. So like, just let me clarify, right? I feel like they're moving the whole organized game in a good direction, right? What they're doing with hyperspace is awesome. The concepts of, you know, the way that the hyperspace tournaments are actually going to work makes sense. I just think the naming conventions and the communication about what it is, that's right. The only thing we need a little bit more of.
Right. I mean, like, I have to explain it to people all the time. But like, no, there's hyperspace trials, and then there's hyperspace cups, and then there's the hyperspace qualifier, and then I'm just like, I get exactly what you're saying, and it's super super confusing,
and they're understaffed, so like there's nobody related to X-Wing that I respect more than the devs and the folks in OP, right? Like these guys do, we don't have the game without them. It's just, man, like what you just said is a serious issue where we get new players that come in and they just, I can't even point them at a document that makes it clear, you know?
Right. Yeah, so like I said, we'll look back at that. Hopefully everything makes a lot more sense in a year. Because, I mean, just change, like, nobody knows. Like, I'm speculating things that, like, the hyperspace cups could be something on a scale of, like, Nova, or they could just be, like, something that was, like, a giant regional, like, Downing Games and stuff in Glen Burnie. Like, nobody knows at this point. So it's definitely something that we'll know in good time.
Which is good.
Yeah.
And then not even worth really talking about, but the app and Best Coast Pairings, it's like, it is the very, very early days of that. It's technology that we want. It's just not, it's not all there yet. But it's got to start somewhere. So
yeah,
it's all good.
Yeah. Best Coast Pairings. I was happy with it for like a little bit, but it's again, something, you know, down the road, hopefully is perfected. We won't get, because I know a couple of the other podcasts were very heavy thoughts on that, so we'll let them take care of all that. Anything else before we start looking forward? No. All right. So looking forward, a couple of things I wanted to address is I noticed this with like the point adjustments in the middle of the seasons. Like, granted, we just talked about how we're not sure what anything is means or anything, how it's going to pan out or anything like that. But it's like, I feel like we're in this state right now that nobody gives two shits about the game, because other than like on a casual Let's Play X-Wing format, because we know that the points adjustments are coming like within a week or two. And like, are we going to get into that same funk every 6 months that we know that these points adjustments are coming? And like, how are we supposed to prepare for this? Like, we know, like, are we just supposed to speculate that something is going to get nerfed and shy away from it? Or, like, it's kind of hard to keep focus on the, like, practicing and building lists when it could just be completely defunct within, like, 2 days.
Well, this might be a question that nobody on this call can answer. But, like, I don't know, Magic has like a crazy adjustment for their formats like every 3 months. Like, what do those players do? Like, I'm genuinely curious as to like how other games.
Right. So
well, I know that it happens with other games.
So like, Magic does do emergency erratas, but I also know that they have a cycle. So whenever they're like,
it's every 3 months, isn't it?
Yeah, so they come out with like a new set.
Super frequent.
Yeah, every 3 months they do like a new cycle, but they also, you know, what's going to be rotated out.
That's true.
Yeah. So yeah, they know that like, okay, like as soon as this cycle starts, and like I believe a cycle, if it's still how it is when I used to play, it was like three sets. So like they said, like once these three sets were in, the next set that came in was going to bump the oldest set out. So I'm curious if something like that's going to happen with this, but at the same time, I don't see it happening. It would be interesting, though, if, like, we know that the regional hyperspace trials or cups, whatever it is now, is supposed to be in springtime. They're saying from, like, March to June. Like, it would be interesting to see if they don't touch points until the end of that. So, like, you do your season, you do it all, and then right after that, it's like everyone's kind of like in this burnout phase. And then right after that, they change the points and then go from there.
Well, all right. So a couple things. They've said they're going to do this twice a year, right? So we're going to get one sometime this month. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to get another points adjustment halfway through the year of the summer, right?
Yep.
That's essentially it. So you kind of have a couple different things going on, right? They're going to be significant wave releases during that time, right? So, like, points adjustments is one thing. You've talked about before how, like, we don't know how things will interact with the new waves. We're going to get wave two in March, or is that February, roughly?
We don't know.
So
back a while ago when they did, like, the wave kits, it was supposed to come out in February, but I think they also said the Wave 2 kit was supposed to come out in, like, November or December, and we're past that, so.
So Wave 3, rather. So let's say that's going to be sometime in the spring.
Right.
Like let's say March, roughly. You know, in a way, like, I think you might agree with this, man. You might not. But I've found that the most interesting times for the game have been when the meta is the most unsettled, you know, initially. But that's very brief, right? Like, that's like one tournament. And then very shortly after that, you kind of get into this middle ground where there's some things that have been discovered, but it hasn't settled enough that the actual counterplay has been figured out. So it's just a couple things kind of bossing other lists. Mm-hmm. So, like, there's just this narrow range, though, where things will be allowed to settle. Which, on net, I think it makes people uncomfortable preparing for a tournament. But it's not bad. It doesn't make the game worse, I guess, is sort of my feeling on it.
And, like, I'm not saying, like, it would necessarily make it worse. I'm just saying that, like, if, let's say we're doing, like, a regional set, and then, like, literally, like, there's like four or five regionals left, and then they're just like suddenly like, oh, points change. I mean, I think they need to really kind of balance when, again, with organized play, they need to get their shit together, clean it up, and make sure that it kind of goes hand in hand with that.
So right now we've got players who are preparing for Phoenix, right? Yep. And players who are preparing for Toronto. And both, you know, both sets of players. I mean, like, if you're preparing for Toronto, you barely know, right? It's just like not even worth it.
Exactly.
But you can look at hyperspace and just get good with a specific set of ships. And it'll pay off a little bit. You just can't do quite the meta preparation that you might be used to. The Phoenix players, I can't imagine what they're going through, because it's, you know, like, will the points be legal? That would be really cool if they are. I would love that if they drop it like the week before, because, like I said, it just makes it interesting. But I don't know. I think the bigger concern that you have is people becoming disinterested in the game because of the unknown state of it. I'm practicing something that won't exist kind of problem.
Yep.
But we as players, we can get creative to just sort of work around that.
The other thing that I'm curious about is, are points adjustments going to have the 14-day or was it 13-day waiting period that like the erratas have or the like facts have? I'm curious if that's going to come into play.
Well, if it would still depend on the level of the event, night.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
They just announce when they do the changes that all these changes are effective for all events on this date, which is 2 weeks out.
Complete madness.
And it comes back to the fact that we don't even know like how they're going to roll this out yet.
So. Complete madness. They drop the points to say that these aren't worth, they aren't in effect for 14 days, but then they change the app to update all the points.
So just that would be nuts. But just like a final comment, like what I mean by, or what I meant by, players have some control over this. I think it's better to practice archetypes in second edition,
yeah,
than it is to practice specific lists or even ships. So like in an art, you can get really good with archetypes that can swap in and out versions of themselves that, you know, will always exist in some form,
right?
And like if you just sort of emphasize that, like you kind of work around it a little bit,
right?
Which, if all you do is fly aces, then like I'm sorry, because the ace you pick sort of controls what that does. But it's one way to deal with it.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Let's go into this personal X-Wing resolutions. Jonathan, do you have anything?
I think I need to play more X-Wing. I don't play it.
That's
true. I need to learn how to play Vassal. I've only played one game, but I've sort of committed to an upcoming league. So.
Nice.
All are welcome.
Marshall, you got any X-Wing resolutions for 2019?
I need to get back on Vassal because I don't have enough time to play it.
You've got like 10 games you're playing now.
Like 10. So. There's that too, but I I think in order for me to get my requisite amount of 2.0 games in, I'm gonna have to go back on stuff there and see what happens.
Chris, you got anything for
So like I think for 2019 I just want to keep trying different styles or types of lists. Like, so like the big thing for me that happened in the transition to 2.0 is that I moved away from aces a little bit, and it, like it didn't make me any better at the game really, but it just kind of taught me some new things. So like I just want to keep trying different versions of these types of lists. So maybe that's bombs, I don't know, but just sort of like it's so easy to get comfortable with one particular type of version of X-Wing.
I'll share mine. One of my personal resolutions is I'm going to try to help. I mean, I feel like the community is definitely strengthening since second edition has come out, but I feel like we're still not there yet from where, like when I first started, like going to these different nights and like seeing like 10, 15 people on like every single night. So like, I definitely want to try to help rebuild this community, especially in the Philadelphia area, and like strengthen it so that we have, a very good like coming whenever we go out to these tournaments. So that's going to be my personal.
Yeah, that's a
good one. So yeah, everyone, if you're listening to this, try to like encourage people come back out and get back into the game. So, all right, let's we have some events coming up. Seventh Dimension. Chris, it's not hyperspace format this weekend.
Yeah, it's extended.
All right, so yeah.
Bring your Dengars. Bring your Nims.
Saturday, the 5th. What time does it start, do you know?
I don't. It's okay. On their website.
Yeah, so check out that. We have Top Deck is having a league. It's basically just the wave kit that they're doing. But it's 8 weeks of X-Wing, so you have 8 weeks to play 6 games. And then Lou is great at organizing these type of things. He's got an entire prize kit to give out. And I believe it's $5 for the league. And then if you, at the end, after you complete your 6 games, if you pay another $5, you can get $15 in credit. And then all that loot on top of it.
Oh, shit. Okay.
So check that out. That's on the Facebook page. And then East Coast Gamers is having a quick build tournament on the 19th. And Gameskeep, I believe this is the Wave Championship, is having a tournament on the 26th. Okay. Anything else you want to add before we close out?
Yeah, just stay tuned for the kind of SJPA or Philadelphia area Vassal kind of leak. Don't have specifics on that yet, but hopefully we can get that spun up and make that a recurring thing.
Right. All right, so we're going to close out. Just quick reminder, we did start up a Patreon just to, you know, we've got some ideas for our next Alt Arts coming out. So that all that money will go to like stuff like that and funding fees. I will actually list it on the podcast websites this week. I kind of just did a test last week to see who would actually sign up. But so thanks a lot, Mike Doe and Tristan and Mystery Subscriber. So you guys are great. But yeah, definitely if we will, all this that you give to us goes right back to you guys. So I will list that. And then I think that's it for this week. Anything else, Jonathan? You got anything? I think you always have shoutouts.
I'd like to give a shout out to Bruno at Millennium Condor. Right. Thank you very much for the stickers and the cards. Much appreciated.
All right. Any other guys? Anything else?
No, I think I'm good.
All right, guys. Have a great night and thanks for listening.
See ya.